Hey everyone, welcome back to But Why Though, the podcast. The podcast where every week, myself, Adrian, and Matt talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, I wanted to take a quick moment to let you know that if you want to get involved in our conversations, head on over to our Twitter page at But Why Though PC and all other social media. You can find us with that same handle. And if you'd like to support us a little more, head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/butwhythoughpc. You get access to our research notes, exclusive episodes, and all of our episodes a day early. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy the show. Welcome back to another episode of But Why Though, the podcast, and today we are talking about a 20-plus-year-old franchise and my favorite, Tomb Raider. It's a revisit episode. This was our very first episode of the podcast, and as always, I'm your host, Kate. I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And we have a super special Lara Crofty guest, Lizzie.
Yay! And my Lara Croft Barbie doll, which no one can see, but she is also here with us.
She is. Yes. And your Funko is
and the Funko.
Camera.
She's too short. She can't ride the roller coaster.
So before we get started, Lizzie, why don't you tell people where they can find you and all of your work?
Sure. I am on Twitter at Lizzie Lynn Garcia. It's Lizzie spelled with a Y because when I was in sixth grade, I didn't want to be Lizzie McGuire. So I spelled it that way. Most of my writing and musings are also on the But Why Though website. And then also for Sirens of the Squinchel and Geeks Worldwide occasionally.
She's a very busy woman.
I am. I try.
So based on all that, why did we bring you here?
Because you actually brought the Lara Croft Barbie doll. I just happened to own it. So it's kind of a package deal, to be honest. For all seriousness, for But Why Though, I have written a few times about Lara Croft. And I'm the go-to editor for, if anybody, Kate writes about Lara Croft as well. So I think it's interesting because Kate and I both love Lara, but we love different Laras.
Yeah, and different which things is, about Laras.
Which is why I'm here.
Yep. This is going to be a balanced episode today.
I was about to say.
Because if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I have feelings about what we're about to talk about.
You have feelings about everything. Yeah. Is that really
that
so much?
That doesn't narrow it down, my love.
Follow me on Twitter, I have feelings.
Psychiatrists everywhere are like, oh man, that's a client.
Oh, anyway, as I'm being attacked right now, let's go into our first question of the day, which is, how many Lara Croft games have you played, and do you know what she's about? Like, do you know her? Do you know her story? What do you know about her?
I played a few of the games. I've beaten zero of the games. I played some of them back in the 90s, basically, when I would go over, like, friends or family, and they had a PlayStation, because I've never owned a PlayStation. Made this decision a long time ago I bought an N64 over a PlayStation.
You bought it with your own money.
Yes.
I feel like you should look in the camera when you attack me.
And what do I know she's about? I know she's basically Indiana Jones, but a female.
Yeah. Off of Matt's point, she is Indiana Jones did inspire who she is. And that's actually the reason why my mom bought me those first games. Well, one of the reasons. If you've listened to episode one, you know that I am a lifelong Lara Croft fan. It is Tomb Raider 1 and 2 were my first games that I ever beat by myself, unassisted. And my mom bought it because I loved Indiana Jones. And it was a strong female character. And Lara is the first female protagonist in a video game, with the exception of Samus Aran, who is not revealed to be a woman until the very end. So it's a little iffy because she's wearing full androgynous armor throughout the entire game before it's revealed. So yeah, I know a lot, probably more than a healthy amount. And I've played every game with the exception of the mobiles, but I have played Guardian of Light. That's me, Adrian.
So I've played the games like in early 2000s. I really can't tell you. Like, I had to like go look at the list to see like which ones they were. They were just like on my uncle's PlayStation because I didn't buy a PlayStation either. So they were just there. But I did play the newest two games on the Xbox, and I've played those all the way through almost 100%, but then I just get bored and then I just never come back to it. And by the time like I almost got 100, the next game came out. So we'll see how it goes for the next one. So like I know about Lara Croft, like I know more or less her backstory. And we also did like almost 3-hour episode about her. So I learned a whole lot there. And I like the movies. Well, some of the movies, like the first one. And like some of the second one. And the reboot was okay. So she's about stuff. She shoots stuff and stuff.
Well, that narrows it down.
Yeah. And she raids tombs. Because, you know, name, branding.
Okay, Lizzie, help me be the subject matter expert here.
All right. In regards to the original games, I did not play them, but I watched my cousins play all of them except for the last one in her life cycle, her OG life cycle. I didn't play the mobile ones because I am tired. I have played all of the reboots, so Tomb Raider and then Rise of the Tomb Raider. I absolutely love the rebooted movie. I don't care what anyone says. I left that movie and I wanted to fight people. And my friend was like, you have fibro. Please sit down. But I literally left that movie and I was like, I am Lara Croft. So I love Lara. I specifically love rebooted Lara, probably because those are the games that I physically sat down and played and didn't just watch playthroughs of, more or less. And then in regards to the Angelina Jolie movies, they're not my favorite, but they're also good fun.
The first one is.
Yes.
Good Whole Life so bad.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I didn't say anything about the movies, but I'm going to talk about... I'm leading this episode, obviously, for reasons. So you'll hear my thoughts about the movies as we go through. Or specifically the reboot movie, because as a revisit episode, we are going to be covering all of Reboot Lara's story and what she has done and what specifically Lara has done and the Tomb Raider franchise has done in this time period. Because we covered a lot of the original Lara Croft and that impact in the first episode. So this is all dedicated to the new series starting in 2013 to now. So that's all of what we're covering today. If you don't know a lot about it, we're going to go into all of the little details. So I want to go ahead and just start with the story. I'm going to do it in twofold. So we'll do it for Tomb Raider, which was the first of the reboot series that came out in 2013, and then Rise of the Tomb Raider. I'll do them both separately so they get their own time. And then it actually really helps when you think about the storyline for the movie. The reboot was launched in 2013 with Square Enix as publisher and Crystal Dynamics and now Eidos Montreal developing. At the time, it was just Crystal Dynamics who was on it. And it's actually been in the works since 2008. So after Underworld comes out, that's when the company decides that they are going to reboot the series entirely. They didn't want to continue with more sequels. And the goal was to change everything. And this was particularly due to a lot of the lackluster responses that the game was getting. And then some atrocities like Angel of Darkness, which is a terrible game. I love Lara Croft, but that game is terrible. So it's not a soft reboot. They change her entire history. They change her entire look. And she has elements of what it was before. But, you know, it's this weird thing. And I'd like to get your thought on it, Lizzie, as well, because it's a prequel, but not a prequel, because they've rebooted her entire history. But then all of the stuff is them saying she's getting to what we had in classic Lara.
It's kind of, it almost feels like an Elseworld story. That's like the best way for me to put it. Like in theory, Batman has multiple origins. So it's like, eventually she will become Tomb Raider. Eventually Bruce becomes Batman, but the way he gets there might be slightly different. Especially in, like, there are parts in the movie and then also parts in even recent trailer and recent gameplay that's been seen where it's very clear that, like, she's getting to her origins. So I really like the idea that she's eventually going to that place. And I think for modern audiences, you can't just start with a femme fatale anymore. You have to have a buildup of how she gets there. Otherwise, the character seems 2D, which isn't necessarily fair to original Lara, but I just think that is how modern audiences interpret things now.
Yeah, I think that's entirely fair. So going into the story of Tomb Raider 2013, Tomb Raider 2013 is set on Yamatai, an island from which Lara, who is untested and not yet the battle-hardened explorer that we know her to be, and she must save her friends and escape while being hunted down by a malevolent cult. Yamatai is a fictional lost island in the Dragon's Triangle off the coast of Japan. The island and the kingdom that once existed there is shrouded in mystery, given its reputation for fearsome storms and shipwrecks that litter the coastline. Yamatai was once ruled by a queen named Himiko, known by her honorific title of the Sun Queen, who, according to legend, was blessed with shamanistic powers that enables her to control the weather. Very little is known about Yamatai's history in the time since Himiko's death, other than that the island's infamy was established shortly thereafter. You know, as in nobody can get to it because you're going to die in the Dragon's Triangle. In exploring the island, the player may find that, among others, there are Portuguese traders, United States Marine, and Japanese military projects from people who were all stranded at Yamatai at various points throughout the history. At the start of the game, the island is populated exclusively by the Solari Brotherhood, i.e. the malevolent cult, who I have major issues with that we'll get into later. And it's a violent cult that was established by criminals, mercenaries, and shipwreck survivors. So essentially people who just inhabited the land who wound up there. The Solari Brotherhood was established its own society based on the worship of Himiko, complete with a social structure, laws, and their exact purpose and intentions is what we go through for the entire story. So ultimately awakening Himiko and how that looks. So they're your big bad. They're the people that you're running from constantly. They're the mobs that you fight with different pieces coming up throughout. We play as Lara, and she's an ambitious archaeology graduate, and she has theories about the location of the lost kingdom of Yamatai, and on the location of the lost kingdom of Yamatai, and she's convinced the Nishimura family, who are descendants from the people of Yamatai themselves, to fund an expedition in search of the kingdom. The expedition is led by Dr. James Whitman, a celebrity archaeologist who's fallen on hard times and is desperate to avoid bankruptcy, and is accompanied by Conrad Roth, a Royal Marine turned adventurer and close friend of the Croft family. And she's kind of Lara's mentor through this entire thing. You also have Sam Nishimura, who is Lara's friend and a representative for the family, who ends up documenting the entire expedition. You have Jocelyn Reyes, a skeptic and temperamental mechanic and single mother. She really reminds me of the mechanic from Lost City of Atlantis.
She does.
Right? Her last name might have also been Reyes.
I think you're right.
Then you have Jonah Maiva, an imposing and placid fisherman who is willing to believe in the existence of paranormal and the esoteric. And esoteric specifically means things between the lines, so like mystical type things. You have Angus Grimaldi, who is a gruff Glaswegian helmsman on the Endurance, which is the ship that Lara takes to Yamatai. And then you have Alex Weiss, a goofy and bespectacled electronic specialist. Yes, I took this from the Wikipedia because it's been a while since I've played the game.
So why didn't they just do this with the movie?
Because the movie blends two pieces of... It blends Tomb Raider and Rise of the Tomb Raider in different ways. And then they had to limit the cast interaction. Well, they didn't have to. But they limited the cast interaction to kind of put her in a different story. And they had to do that entire intro with the bike stuff. They probably could have done more of this stuff if they didn't do the entire intro.
I also think for the movie, part of the reason you don't see any of the supporting cast is because they... Like, in the game, I didn't care about the supporting cast. And I... I feel like there are times where you're supposed to, but I was just like, all right, well, bye-bye. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure producers of the movie were like, if we can't make people care about these characters in less time that we have than a video game, then they probably don't need to be here.
Yeah, and in like typical Lara fashion, like she goes with this giant group of people and then she's cut off from them entirely and you like find them one by one in right. the game and reunite and have those things. And that's just not, it's easier to do that with one person like they did in the movie than an entire cast.
But also none of them are useful.
Yeah.
Except for like...
Jonah's what? Kind of useful.
Jonah's super Jonah's useful. And then, what is it, Roth?
Yeah, Roth.
Who's useful. Otherwise, it's like... They just complain.
Yeah, she's not wrong.
But this sounds a lot better than the whole bike scene that we got in the movie.
Up for debate.
I didn't dislike the bike scene. You really hate the bike scene?
I didn't like completely hate it, but I really didn't like it.
Okay.
Because I think you wanted just more Lara stuff and less
I didn't
bike
see the
stuff.
I didn't see the point of it.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what he said in the review. He like talked for like 10 minutes about this in the review that we did of the movie.
I just didn't see the point of it. It just
I think the point was like she's rich but she doesn't want to be, which is a weird point to make. But
so I ride a bike with a leaking paint can.
But I think it also like I think that the movie Lara comes in a little bit more competent than Lara in the game because they did that to showcase, hey, she's a fighter. Hey, yeah. She has endurance. Like it was kind of like setting up that like the transition from her regular life that she runs like daily into this life is pretty much like she has the endurance and some of the skills to actually get in there and do these things.
No, I do think movie Lara is a bit more like street.
Yeah.
Like movie Lara is far more likely to get in a bar fight than video game.
Yep.
Rebooted Lara Croft. Like 100%.
Yep.
Like that girl just starts bar fights for fun. And I respect
Have you seen her 8-pack?
I respect
I would like I would start bar fights for fun if I had those muscles.
Seriously.
Yeah, so that's pretty much a wrap of that of the Tomb Raider game. And when we look at gameplay, this is one of the biggest things that changes in the reboot. It isn't just her origin story that changes. It's also how you play Lara that changes. So when it comes to gameplay, first and foremost, this game was treated as survival-based with a world exploration component, with all of the tombs being optional. You never once had to go into a tomb and do puzzles. They were there in the background. And then you also had a more openness of the world that wanted you to explore it. And then on top of that, you had this terrible multiplayer, which is probably the biggest like critical ding that the game takes is putting time in the multiplayer and not putting more time into expanding the world.
That was also at the point where every game had to have a multiplayer because for some reason studios and studio execs who know nothing about anything were like, listen, COD makes money because it's multiplayer. You have to put in multiplayer. And it's like no one walks into a Tomb Raider game and is like, yeah, I really want to play with other people.
You know
Thanks,
what they
Assassin's
want?
Creed.
Oh, yeah. That actually, yeah, that's more of Assassin's Creed.
They crashed and failed so hard that they brought down all the other single-player games that had multiplayer components with them. It's like when the Chronicles of Riddick, like their third movie, sucked so hard, and then sequels after that weren't nearly as bad. Because all of the suckage was in that movie.
Adrian's about to start a fight.
That's fine. I've seen Lara Croft. I'll fight.
First of all, why you gotta bring my man Vinny Diesel into any of this conversation?
Listen, you know I like him in Fast and Furious.
And I didn't even bring it up, just so we're clear, listeners.
I forgot that movie existed.
Don't you badmouth Riddick.
You're welcome.
Take that somewhere else.
All right, listeners, it's been really fun. Thanks for having me.
And we'll get into it a little bit when we start talking about the critical receptions of the game. But like, since I like just bringing it up, like that was always my biggest problem with the game is like all of the time you put into multiplayer could have been put into making this necessary tombs for you to go through.
I literally don't play multiplayer.
You could have just stumbled through them.
Oh, yeah.
I played it for a solid 5 hours and I was like, no, because so like,
you can't get that time back, Kate.
I know I can't, but there is something in me that said I'm going to make myself love this game. It's like people who went to go see The Last Jedi 8 times. Like,
God, we're just
We're throwing hot takes.
That is so accurate.
Just hurting everybody today. Nobody is safe.
I'll cut that out.
You do not need to cut that out. It's probably the best part of the whole episode.
You stand by it. You stand by your beliefs, Kate.
Like, I just desperately wanted to like this movie. Or, fuck, this game. I did watch The Last Jedi. I
wanted to like The Last Jedi.
I did. I watched it a second time because I tried to like it. Anyway. Okay. So, like, I played through the game four different times thinking that I had missed tombs, but there were all of, like, maybe seven that were, like, in tiny little holes that if you explored the world, you could find and go to. But you were never once forced into a position to really live out, like, to really get the gameplay, that the mechanics. So not even, like, how Laura looks or the story. It's the mechanics of the game that I fell in love with. It's, like, platforming and puzzles and tombs. And that's something you don't really get here, or the danger of, like, the traps and working around them and that type of stuff. You do in a different way because it's a different type of story. But what this brings into the Tomb Raider franchise, which I really like from this point on too, because it gets better in Rise, and from the pieces that I've played in Shadow, it's also really good, is the crafting element, as well as some RPG mechanics that get added.
Do you like those RPG mechanics? Because they've done it with quite a few games, including Assassin's Creed. And while I find them cool, sometimes I find them totally unnecessary.
So I think it's necessary in this series, and I'll tell you why, because you're building Lara from the ground up, starting in this game, and when you hit a Rise of the Tomb Raider, you can pick between three different skill trees, essentially, and you're building Lara how you want to play. Is she a brawler? Is she a hunter? Is she... forgot what the other one is, but there's three essentially classes, and that
the other one's literally crafting.
Okay, is it? Oh, survivor.
Survivor. Yeah, it's survivor. Like survivalist or something like that.
Yeah. And so, like, those are the areas that you choose, and it goes with your play style, and I appreciate that because I chose brawler because it was a lot harder. Like, I just got up in there. But, like, it changed the play style in a way that I appreciated, because you actually had to, like, the spending points aspect meant that you had to put thought into what you were doing. And, like, even though you didn't have that skill tree stuff really mapped out in Tomb Raider, the crafting pieces made it feel, it brought the survival elements of the game into it. And then in Rise, I think they accelerated on adding more RPG elements to the game that really just helped it kind of get into its own while also adding levels of play to it. Because for me, like, it was too easy of a game. But that's just from my standpoint, because there are a lot of people who really love the open world exploration, which is what this Tomb Raider brings to it.
I mean, I'm definitely, like, in regards to open world games, I tend to be a completionist. And I've 100%ed both of those Tomb Raider games. I don't have the platinum because I don't care about multiplayer. But, like, to me, it's like, no, this is a single player game. I have the platinum. Like, don't at me.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm fine with that. I also agree with you in regards to those mechanics. Like, not both of these Lara stories, like, she comes, the first one especially, she comes and she is not prepared for any of this. The second one, she's like, well, I brought a jacket this time, but she still somehow manages to be completely unprepared. Like, Lara Croft is very smart, but she is the opposite of Batman. She is prepared for nothing.
You're not wrong.
Like, girl, bring some MREs next time. Like, what are you doing?
So as we go into Rise of the Tomb Raider, from this point, let me go ahead and give you the story as I did, with,
before we do that, I do want to say that this game was really safe.
Yeah.
Like, Tomb Raider was a safe game, which I think they moved away from a lot of the platforming elements and things of that nature, because it had been done so much in previous games and in other franchises that had also died, that Square was probably just like, no, start Square One, figure out new content. And they figured out what was selling at that point, which was action adventure, kind of hide and shoot type game, which is why that's in there. I also think it's important to note that the director of Tomb Raider, who didn't direct the Rise or the next one, Corey Barlog, he started at Sony Santa Monica. So he did the God of War series, which kind of petered out the same way that Tomb Raider did, rebooted Tomb Raider successfully, and then went on to reboot God of War again. So there's something to be said about just characters coming back differently, where it's not that their previous iterations aren't valid. It's just that studios are smarter even than Hollywood sometimes, where it's like, no, you have to find out, completely start from the ground, completely figure out what is happening right now.
And what we'll see from like critic stuff, or from like critical receptions of both of these games, is they kind of have inverse reactions. So Tomb Raider is lauded for its story because it was no longer just an objective based hit this point, solve this puzzle, which I appreciate. And that's one thing that it was critically acclaimed for, but the gameplay mechs were the piece that it fell really short on. And then you go to Rise, and as I go through the story, and this one's a little bit longer because you can kind of see how it maps out. Their critique was, this story is super safe, but you actually brought in a lot of different gameplay mechanics. And so you end up having like these different pieces to it. But I agree with you to an extent in the being safe. And I think specifically to what you said about how platforming had just petered out.
Yeah.
And so they were like, we're going to do a game that is super easily accessible to everybody because we're going to reboot this franchise and make a lot of money off of it. And so they took out a lot of the harder elements, in my opinion, to bring in a wider audience. And
for
so they
sure.
went safer.
It makes it more mainstream. Because when you have...
casuals.
When you...
oh, wait. Because
whenever you...
You broke her with that comment.
Well, that's about the time when we have the whole thing with casuals in games. So, because it's about 2013.
This is a whole other conversation.
I know.
Lizzie, continue.
The only casuals in gaming are COD players.
You're not wrong.
I'll say that till I die. Yeah. Because people call me casual all the time. But I don't even know what I was saying. No, in regards to the gameplay, it is easier than previous Tomb Raiders. Because I remember picking up a controller as a child, and like, I remember crying to my mom, and my mom was like, I don't know. I can't help you. Please, any other question, child. She had no idea. So I do agree that they took out kind of some of the harder mechanics. And I'm very opposite from you, because I play a game on easy, because I didn't pay $60 to lose.
And I play a game on hard, because I did not pay $60 to finish a game in 6 hours. Again, this is why this is a balanced episode.
It's true.
Very, very balanced takes. I like it.
Okay. So getting into Rise of the Tomb Raider. 1 year, it is set 1 year after the events of Tomb Raider, and Lara is struggling to explain her experience of the supernatural in Yamatai and is experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder. Looking for answers, she turns to her late father's research on the lost city of Kitas. I don't remember how to pronounce it.
It's not important.
Okay.
Yeah, just like the whole story.
Yeah. And the promise of immortality.
I didn't say that much. Hot take over here. We all got to take a turn on the hot take train. Jesus.
So his partner Anna attempts to warn her that his obsession with the mythical city drove him to ruin and suicide. Lara ignores her and organizes an expedition to Syria, hoping to uncover the tomb of the Prophet of Constantinople, who is a king figure in that area's legend. The tomb is empty, and Lara is interrupted by Trinity, an ancient order of knights turned paramilitary organization, as one does, investigating the supernatural, and their leader Constantine. As she flees, Lara discovers a symbol etched in the tomb, which she then links to a book on Russian religious history in her father's study at the Croft Manor. A Trinity assassin infiltrates the manor and steals the book, another scene I have a very big problem with that we'll get into later. Prompting Lara and her friend Jonah to go to Siberia.
Jonah is the only one who comes back.
My man Jonah.
After all the stuff she went through,
everybody else is like, you're a lot of baggage. And Jonah's like, yeah, I'll come.
Yeah. Gotta love got Jonah.
A skill. I'm a nice guy.
Yeah. Something, something rugby.
Not wrong. So they end up getting separated by an avalanche while climbing in a mountain, and Lara is forced to continue alone. And that avalanche timing, because it is a cutscene that you press buttons to, it's actually fairly difficult, which was kind of the first sign. I was like, oh, this game is actually going to be like, it's more what I'm looking for. So
if I have the option to turn off quick time events, I do. Oh, my fingers don't like them.
Quicktime events are dumb.
No, but if I have to keep pressing a button. In Spider-Man, you have to keep pressing square. So I went in the options and I turned it off because my thumb started hurting. And I was like, I don't have time for joint pain right now. I only have 3 days to beat this.
Yeah.
Adrian, do you hate Telltale games then?
I hate games like just pressing the button over and over again is just dumb. Like, that's not skill. That's just how fast you can press the button.
See, the difference is that in the Avalanche, the mechanic, the quick time play actually changes the button each time you die. So you're not repressing the exact same one, and you're not pressing it repeatedly.
It's worse. I didn't die, so.
But I die all the time in those games. My nickname in games is usually Fumbles.
So I'm actually one of the people that, and it's probably because I'm a horror person, that enjoys Lara's death scenes, and it's something that she's been known about since the very beginning of the game.
You should see someone sometimes. Just kidding.
Horror friends, come on, please. Okay, so Lara discovers that Anna is dying. Wait, where did I go? Yeah. Okay, so she discovers that Trinity has made a Soviet-era mine a base of their operations in their search for Kitez. Lara is caught trying to retrieve the book and is imprisoned with Anna. And then you have the dun-dun-dun moment that Anna actually is a Trinity spy who manipulated her father. And so she and Constantine interrogate Lara about the divine source, which is essentially this artifact that is believed to bestow immortality. Lara then escapes with the help of Jacob, who is this random-ass stranger who's just like, I'll help this woman, who leads her through the mines after she agrees to aid him against Trinity. Jacob is revealed as the leader of the Remnant, which are the descendants of the prophet's followers, and he warns her that the divine source is not what she expects it to be. Lara discovers that Anna is dying, and that's the reason why Anna is seeking the divine source for herself, and then Jacob and Lara decide that the only way to protect that source is to retrieve it before Trinity can. Lara discovers the Atlas, another artifact. There's just like a whole bunch of artifacts in this game, which I greatly appreciate, but it makes the story extremely convoluted, and you get a little bit of going back to like objective, now main story plot, which is fine for what this game does. So essentially, I'm just going to kind of speed through it. She ends up meeting the Deathless Ones, which are the City of the Immortals guardians. And she ends up reading these journals that were written by a Trinity agent. And then she realizes the truth of Jacob's warning: the divine source bestows immortality at the cost of oneself, which is what the Deathless Ones are. And then the Remnant attack the Deathless Ones, giving Lara time to reach the heart of the city. She meets Constantine, who is blocking the path and critically wounds him. But before he dies, you get the big revelation that Lara's dad did not actually commit suicide, but he was, in fact, murdered by Trinity.
Dun, dun, dun!
Never saw that coming.
Lara. You didn't die on an island? Or fake die on an island?
And then real die?
Yeah. Real die? After like 30 minutes of like, hey, I'm not dead.
Lara is too late to prevent Anna from retrieving the divine source, but Anna is overwhelmed by its power and Lara destroys it. The Deathless Ones perish and Jacob's immortality is lost, but he's actually really happy that he's able to die. Jacob's daughter, Sophia, ends up...
So before we stop this, I'm going to cut you off. So if we had a choice to where we have something from immortality, who's chasing it down?
What do you mean?
Are you going to be Anna?
To make myself immortal?
Yes.
Or, like, stop somebody from getting it.
I'm really tired. I don't want to do this forever. Like, I don't want to be immortal. That sounds exhausting.
I mean, am I dying? Because if I'm already dying, then I'm not going to make myself immortal because I'm just going to assume that I have all the pain with me because it doesn't say that it's going to heal you.
Oh, that's true.
I'm just going to be constantly in my dying state, so no.
Okay.
Are you?
Why not? You want to live for be immortal?
Do you really want to live forever? You
So long as it makes me perfectly healthy and 100% that I in like maybe
that's true. I'll do a lot to be healthy.
I wouldn't mind immortality, but then I feel like eventually you end up like Jacob and it's like, I'm just fucking happy. I'm dying now.
But I feel like I would get so tired of watching people around me also die.
Just see, that's sad. The thing. Like, I just don't know that I'd have to worry about that.
Not wrong.
Wow.
Not wrong. Just Damien Dark it. You'll be fine.
You wouldn't want to see what happens in 2100?
Oh, no, I definitely do. But if you give me a time machine or immortality, I'll take a time machine.
I'm not going to science geek on you. It's good. Because if you take a time machine and you go to the future, you'll immediately die because you're not used to those germs. And if you go back in time, you'll kill everybody else because they're not used to your germs.
Oh, but if I could kill everybody, I can then become the conqueror.
Oh boy, no time machine for Kate.
That's
a
turn. No, that's okay. Why you just take, you know, you just take medicine when you go back. You'll be good.
Like, you are biological warfare. Listen, as someone who takes a lot of medicine, I'm going to be honest with you, that is not the answer.
You take some hand sanitizer, you'll be fine. Right.
That's how it works.
I'm not a witch. I have hand sanitizer, Middle Ages.
Exactly. That's how that works.
I'm not a witch. I can just read.
I mean, that's why you just take the, like, Vandal Savage route and, like, just, like, live forever and then just, like, eventually just slowly conquer everything.
That's
what I would do.
Oh, my God.
Anna's problem is that she just tries to grab it and then, like, take it immediately.
Who are my friends? I mean, they are everything in my life.
Okay. You don't like Riddick. So that's what we're...
So we were never friends. Is that what you're trying to say?
But you did give us the line, Vin Diesel and his wife, the streets. So I think we're okay.
Yeah. You get a pass this time.
And if you'd like to hear that, it's on our Steve Ditko episode, which
is also good. I don't understand how either one of those go with any reference of what we're talking about.
Okay, we got there somehow. Anyway, so Jacob's daughters, Sophia, ends up leading the Remnant, and Jonah recovers from the wounds that he received fighting, and Laura just starts planning her next expedition, like, immediately after this, and Laura vows to investigate more of the world's mysteries, all in an effort to thwart Trinity's plans before they happen. And this is where you see her really growing into that Tomb Raider aspect that we expect and we're ready for. In the post-credit scene, 2 weeks before Laura and Jonah leave Siberia, Laura asks Anna if she killed her father. Anna denies it, admitting that Trinity gave her the order. She is then killed by a sniper who asks his unseen superior about killing Laura, and then Laura is ordered to stand down, and that...
Wait, is Laura ordered to stand down, or is he ordered to stand down?
Huh? He's ordered to stand down from killing Laura.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's essentially the story. It's really straightforward, and all of the twists are pretty expected. With the exception of the cutscene, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the cutscene, you mean? Yeah, like, the cutscene's like the only thing, and even then, like, it's kind of like tropey, right? Like, that's why I like the story in the other one better. Like, when you said that, like, people like the gameplay in this one, but the story in the other one is exactly how I feel about these two games. So I'm just hoping Shadows of the Tomb Raider just builds them both together, and then the gameplay and the story is there. Because I thought the story was just
there.
Like
we get in there, Adrian.
Convoluted and like tropey and. I don't know how many times you said, like, dun, 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 or, and then we find out, like, come on. Or, like, just, like, over the thing, like, it's like, come on.
But did anybody play the DLC for Rise?
No. So, yes. I haven't played any of them.
I did.
So, for those listening, it has 4 DLCs. You have Baba Yaga, The Temple of the Witch, Cold Darkness Awakened, and then Blood Ties, which is essentially communist zombies, and then Laura's Nightmare, which is like Laura, but zombie mode. And now Lizzie can go into those extensions.
Baba Yaga, because I play it on PS4, so the edition I had came with DLC, like kind of like a Game of the Year edition. And so I didn't know I was going into DLC when I went to do Baba Yaga, and I was like, this is weird. What does this have to do with Trinity? And then I realized it was DLC, and that was like the stupidest, hardest boss fight. And I mean, take that with a grain of salt, because I'm bad at video games despite continuing to play them, but it was kind of a fun twist because it was like a Russian witch, per se, but then at the end of it, it was like just some lady with hallucinogens, and I was like, no, go all out, like, have this be a supernatural witch. That's exactly how I also felt at the end of the Tomb Raider movie. I was like, y'all just gotta own your supernatural. Like, if you want to call CIA cover up and be like, no, it was a weird biological weapon, that's fine, but no, don't, you just dive into it, believe in yourselves. And then I actually really liked the Blood Ties one, which is where you go around Croft Manor and That one had so many fun Easter eggs, which my favorite one is Lara finds things from her childhood. And one of the things she finds is a letter that her like butler wrote to her dad where she was late. And the butler literally says, he's like, Lara is incredibly smart. Today she locked me in the freezer.
That is so good.
And I was like, yes, I did lock you in the freezer. I'm not sorry.
Yeah. I locked him in the freezer many a times.
She was creepy.
And he would just go, oh. Oh.
But yeah, so that one, I feel like Blood Tales was really fun because it had, it's almost similar to what Arkham Riddler trophies are for me. Like, everybody gives me shit because they're like, why do you love the Riddler missions? And I'm like, because it's Batman lore. Like, yeah. That entire DLC was Tomb Raider lore.
Yeah.
Like,
and there that's was probably a lot something of, that I need to go back and do.
You might enjoy that. It's not combat really at all. It's mostly just you walk through and have Tomb Raider lore. So it's a very chill DLC.
I guess the thing is, how much did that DLC cost?
I have no idea. It was included in the game. That's the
problem with some of the other ones. Is
if it was more than like $10, it's probably not worth it.
Like I said, it's probably one of those people who are like, oh, I got to pay $10 to find out some lore or do some little trophies.
I mean, you can probably just watch a playthrough. Might be better off.
I am really happy to hear that, though, and I think that that really sets up when we start talking about specifically Of Shadow, which I got to play 45 minutes of, and I can't wait to play it on Saturday when I get my game. So one of the cool things that I found out is there was a lot done. There was a lot put into this story. Specifically, one of the game's main intentions was to craft a more personal experience for players. And the team wanted to explore the journey in which Lara becomes the Tomb Raider. And this is kind of when you get them talking more and more about her meeting, like meeting in the middle where the original Tomb Raider starts. She becomes determined to uncover more myths and convinces, in order to convince the world that they're real, which is why you have her immediately planning something right off the bat, because they want to establish that, like, Lara is in it now. Lara is in this world and she's going to stay in it. They wanted to make her more experienced and competent, but still vulnerable to make it appealing to players. Essentially, they just try to find this nice balance, and that they hope that in the story, players could see Lara's character's progression. And they wanted to indicate that she had this hunger for knowledge, as well as adjusting a collectible system and having them learn new languages, unlocking new content and upgrades. The story itself was, a lot of the game was inspired by different movies. I forgot her name, the woman who wrote this game, but specifically Rambo 2 is directly the reason why they have the stealth mechanic. Terminator 2, Sarah Connor, is the reason that Laura has like this truth that she bears that nobody believes. The Edge and the Gray were used as templates for the wolf fighting scenes. Hannah and the Descent were used for weapon play. So Hannah greatly influenced bows. And pickaxes were influenced by The Descent, which makes me happy as a horror fan, with The Descent as one of my number one favorite horror movies of all time.
Hannah, it's the Soviet movie, right?
I think so. Soviet She's like movie? A young assassin.
Yeah. I know what movie. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, Rihanna Pratchett is her name.
Okay.
And then AVP, Alien vs. Predator, and Day After Tomorrow influenced the Tundra Siberian setting. Take that what you will with those two movies.
So Batman Arkham that did stealth mechanics.
No, they credit Rambo 2. However, when we get to that section, we'll talk about people bring its highly similar gameplay with Batman Arkham and Assassin's Creed.
Listen, I love both of those games. I don't even care. Like, I don't, that was the thing I said when people are saying every other game is Batman Arkham, and I'm like, yeah, but you liked Batman Arkham and you would play more of that, so why are you mad?
I mean you're a valid point.
Yeah. Okay, so getting into gameplay a little bit, the gameplay here, it leans fully into RPG mechanics where you spec lore. I already talked about that a lot. You have a stealth mechanic, which I thought was pretty damn janky. I don't like it that much. It is just, it's really forced. It's really hard to use. And the area of effect for the stealth, they don't like, I kind of appreciate the ability of the game to introduce new things and not really walking you through every piece of it. But when you have something that's integral to the gameplay, like a stealth mode, you need to take time to, one, develop it to where it's not janky if it's your main mechanic and you actually have a build for her where she does that. And then, two, you need to take time to walk people through it so they can understand.
So, one, is this a janky thing or is this a you thing? Because I've seen you play a stealth game.
It's kind of janky.
No, it's janky. It reminds me of Wolfenstein Stealth.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this game is not built for stealth.
Why
are you making me stealth?
Exactly.
And I play a lot of stealth games. When I play Batman, I'm Batman. I don't want to be seen. When I play Dishonored, I will restart wherever I am if I'm not in Ghost, which is where if someone has seen me, I will restart. So it's a little jank.
Oh, you're lucky this time.
Yeah, it's so janky, and it's like counterintuitive to like the gameplay stuff. If I don't want to be sneaky Laura, don't make me be sneaky Laura.
Like, don't give me a grenade launcher.
Right?
And then tell
exactly.
And that's also one of the things that I don't like about how they introduce the skills is they have you do everything, and then they're like, okay, now pick your things.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like, but I just played as doing everything. Why do I have to play pick one now?
The Far Cry 5 stealth is kind of like that too. It's similar if anybody's played that, where it's like you can be stealthy for like two enemies and then they realize, and then it's like, okay, balls to the wall we go.
Yep.
Those are two less enemies you have to worry about.
Now, the cool thing is that they did bring in a lot more puzzles that you had to go through now. And they were all of the puzzles were based on in-game physics, and they often connected into larger puzzles. And you did have more, you had more tombs, and you had more of that, the aspect that I liked from it. Are you going to talk about that one time I got stuck on one?
Yeah. So Kate was yelling how much she was stuck on it, and kept yelling at me and yelling at me. And I finally walked over there. And I was like, oh, you just have to set this on fire like this. And we were done.
No, but it was because, so here's the thing.
I
refused to mute survivor mode, because survivor mode in this game makes it so easy to solve all the puzzles, because it lasts like for so freaking long and it maps everything out for you. So I try not to do that.
To be fair, I played the entire Arkham game in the Batman mode, and I forgot that the game was not just blue and white.
I hate that. I can't do that. It hurts my head. That's like in The Witcher. I turned off the Witcher vision, the thing, because it makes a fisheye to where you're supposed to go. I turned it off because I was like, this is giving me a headache. If I stay in detective mode too long, I'm like, Batman's got migraines. Batman's got to go.
Well, that was the funny thing. I stayed in detective mode so long that I couldn't play the game the other way. Because I would turn off, like, I can't see anything. Like, can we get some lights on or something?
And so, like, and the survivor vision in Tomb Raider is everything grays out, and then all of the pieces that you need to use light up yellow, like a yellow orange.
You mean like Assassin's Creed?
Easy. Yes. But
like eagle eye vision. Is it eagle vision?
Yeah.
Eagle vision.
Yeah. So that's something that ends up happening. But I do like the difficulty of the puzzles in this one. There isn't a lot of platforming aspects to it, which is still rough for me. But the puzzle additions and the tomb additions made it a more well-rounded Tomb Raider game, in my opinion. And I like this one more than the first one.
I like her. She has more like traversal gadgets.
Yeah.
That I liked. Like, I liked her little wire that she could swing with. I loved that wire. I use that whenever I started falling, because that happens a lot.
Like Batman.
Like Batman. Where I just, but Batman at least has a cape, so for some reason he's like, no, I don't take fall damage. I hope all the listeners get to hear my great sound effects.
So kind of going to a little bit of background before we jump into the butt waivers for today.
We're like an hour.
I know. I'm going to be cutting down a lot of this. But they'll release on Patreon. So Lizzie, you can listen to it.
Oh, great.
So a little bit of background information from episode one. If you haven't listened to it, there were three main components to why I saw her, to why she is really revolutionary, and she's pretty much a feminist icon, but she's grounded in Riot Girl feminism, which is very different than what we have today, because feminism is not a static thing. It changes with the culture.
It's a hashtag.
Like most things. Oh, don't bring up that episode. Don't bring up that episode. It's the Flash episode. It's terrible. But the other problem was her being too sexualized. And the reason I keep harping on mechanics is because Tomb Raider as a series revolutionized 3D platforming and revolutionized platforming and puzzle games as a whole, specifically as something that you could be immersed in. It wasn't just a side scroller. So that's why the mechanics for me have always been like one of the cores of what the game has been. So that leads us to what has happened today. Why are we talking about this? Why are we revisiting it? So specifically when you look at like some critiques of the games, it's too much like Uncharted, too much like Assassin's Creed, too much like Arkham. Like, it is very much a piece of the gaming culture that we have now, which, as Lizzie said, you liked those things.
See, people only make, I mean, I guess they also do it for movies, but people really only make these comments about games. Because if I walk into an action movie, I don't sit here and complain, oh, that was too much like this other action movie I've seen. I know what I'm getting into.
Yeah.
And when you walk into Riddick, what were you thinking?
I was thinking this could be better.
What were you thinking? That's what I was thinking in this game because it removed all of the mechanics of the other game.
this had more potential and they squandered it.
But yeah, no, and so like I understand both from Lizzie's perspective, and then I also see it from the other side. Is like when I went into it, I didn't expect those things. I expected a Tomb Raider game.
Right.
From the mechanic standpoint, which is why I do think that critique is valid to a point. Whereas if you're knocking the good things that the game did, that this other game did just to knock it because it's similar versus these are just different mechanics than Tomb Raider games have had. Those are two different arguments.
But I also feel like in regards to gameplay mechanics, every game is going to probably use triggers for shooting because times out of 10, your controller, whatever game you pick up, is pretty much the same. And if it's not the same, you can map it.
Yep.
Which I've done many times. But so I don't always understand. I get it, but I don't get it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I always say this about Uncharted and people get annoyed with me, but Uncharted is a great game, but that gameplay is terrible.
Yeah.
That gameplay is garbage because the story is great, which is fine. So people get upset about weird things and they let a lot of things go depending on the studio. Because depending on if it's a Bethesda game, people are going to be like, this is the best thing in the world. We love it. We've never seen anything more beautiful. And I love Bethesda. But at the same time, y'all got to stop nitpicking. I'm really scared when Matt agrees with me.
Like, oh, it's no, a little he's saying that because he's a Bethesda. He loves Bethesda.
Okay. Bethesda. I thought that was like a, yes, we agree. Let me tell you about my evil plan in which you are going to agree with.
I agree. Everything you're saying is not hyperbolic and is correct.
Well, I was going to say, I agree with The Sims because like with Kate's point, which I say all the time, these games all came out in the 90s. I don't care about your 1990s platformer 2D thing anymore.
Well, but that's the thing. This wasn't a 2D platformer. It wasn't a side-scrolling platformer, and it led the way to actually have more 3D platformers. Right, well,
Banjo and Kazooie is also not around anymore, really. So.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't care about Banjo and Kazooie anymore.
Well, then you're going to hate Shadow of the Tomb Raider because there's a fuck ton of platforming in it.
I'm actually really excited.
Well, I know. I'm just saying in general, though, like a lot of these points of like coming up, like a lot of people don't care about a lot of this stuff anymore.
But for me, the same way that you bring up dumbing down MMOs, that's what this felt like to me. Because the original games, the platforming aspects, the puzzles and the tombs are what made that game like really hard to play through. And it took multiple times to get through areas because you had exploration. You had an exploration component in finding all of the treasures and the they were like little like CD-ROM type things to like learn out different pieces of lore and different pieces of Lara's story. So that was an aspect, but the other aspect was just making it to the next level because it was really hard and they got progressively harder. And for me, it plays as one game, nothing is too hard. It's just all one. This is all you do. Nothing
gets increasingly
harder.
You just have to look at the time frame of this between Uncharted,
Batman. Yeah, no, and I agree with that.
Gaming companies are probably even somewhat worse, as you were talking about with Hollywood. If they see something working, they are going to do that.
Lizzie made those points, and I do agree with that. They are way more
advanced at doing that.
Like, they had a reason to do this.
Yeah, and what I mean, going back to it, in a lot of, not that it's necessarily a safe game, but the gameplay mechanics on that first game are real safe.
Yeah.
There's a commercial reason for that.
Yeah, and then that's how come they stepped it up in the second game, because they actually did get that critique from a lot of Tomb Raider, or at least classic Tomb Raider fans, because I want to make the distinction, because like, it doesn't, like, you are no less valid if you just like this, and vice versa, unless
right.
you're being a dick about it, in which case I don't want to talk to you.
In which case you're not valid at all. You
exactly.
should leave. How did you find my Twitter?
We have a shirt for that. Love the thing, don't worry. that's pretty much where the critiques come from. The other critique is too much killing, which there are two sides to this. So Feminist Frequencies actually had a post go out saying that there was too much killing and the original Lara Croft didn't kill that many humans, and I just want to watch the pretty scenery. And it made me very mad, because I'm like,
there's why too much killing?
Yeah.
See, that seems sexist to me, because nobody walks in to spec off the line and is like, man, I really wish I could just look at the pretty scenery.
Yeah. Well, technically, Batman doesn't kill anybody.
That's Batman's got loopholes. Electricity killed Batman. Batman fell off the roof. That was gravity. That's not Batman.
As long as you press Y, you just knocked him out, even if you threw him off the building.
Literally. Or when
I think Kevin Conroy said that there was it was like kind of like the comics code. Anything in animation, if somebody fell out a helicopter, they had to make a final so that you could know they were alive off camera in the original Batman series.
That's a whole nother episode.
Yeah.
That series. I'm not going to start on a tangent about how great things that were decided there was. But yeah, no, that's ridiculous to say that she kills too much. Also, yep. 9 times out of 10, all the kills she's doing is literally to survive.
Yes.
If I don't kill this man, he will kill me. What do you want me to do? Sit here and be killed?
Turn yep. the no. other cheek.
Listen. Lara Croft, not Jesus.
And don't be.
We're finding a different prophet, Matt.
But so the valid critique that kind of, I'm sorry, it's not a valid critique. It's stupid. You go into an action adventure game, you're going to kill people. Get over it. That's what the setting is. And Lara kills a lot of things. Yeah, they may not have been human, but she still shot some people up or shot some things up.
She shot a T-Rex, and yeah. I'm pretty sure. That is worth way more than any of the men I have killed in Rise of the Tomb Raider or Tomb Raider. Because exactly. that T-Rex probably has answers to a lot of questions in paleontology. And Lara was just like, all right, riddle this thing with bullets.
Yep. So the genuine critique to come out of here is specifically the detachment from the combat play to the story. So in the story, you have Lara, who is, I don't want to say incapable, but she's not ready. She's somebody who is like fresh out of grad school, going into an uncharted land. Oh God, I just said uncharted. Going into Yamatai, not knowing how to do anything. And then all of a sudden she just becomes a killing machine. And so I can at least understand that critique, in that there is a disconnect between the story, where Lara is at in the story, and then what the story asks you to do.
She took a lot of really interesting electives in college, okay? Listen,
which I think goes to the point of why the bike scene is kind of necessary.
It did need to be 15 minutes long.
And so that's kind of the critique that comes out of that. The other one we already talked extensively about is the shitty multiplayer. The other critique of this game is that the story is very, very rapey. There are like multiple instances where there feels like there's almost going to be a sexual assault that's going to happen.
Or are you talking about one or two?
So in two, you have that instance when they break into the thing, into the house, and throw her on the table.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
Yeah. And then in one, you have the Solari Brotherhood pretty much like talking in the background, and almost every scene they're in, it is extremely cringy dialogue. Yeah. And it's for me, it seemed like the main piece of the game is her versus people, but mostly her versus her environment. Whereas there were many times in that first Tomb Raider game, listening to the dialogue from the Solari Brotherhood, where I was like, oh no, my big threat is being like sexually assaulted. And it was too much.
What do you expect from a crime lord, people who live on a deserted
island? I expect better. Yeah. I get that when I walk down the street. I don't need it in a video game.
Yeah. Like, this is, it was ham-fisted, essentially. Like, they just put it on everything. Like, could you have used it as a device that wasn't as, like, every situation is her being threatened this way? When you have, she, like, you have an entire environment to play with that did not have to be your default background dialogue the entire time. And they weren't.
I also think they could have done an aspect of where it's not that we want to sexually assault Laura. It's like, we need to kill this girl because if she gets off this island and tells what's up, we're going to have issues. And exactly. She could be capable. It's okay. When you play Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which you can play as Evie, unless they make me play as Jacob, bless his little heart, I'm only playing as Evie. And despite the fact that game takes place in Victorian London, you are never catcalled, you're never spoken to in any inappropriate sexual way, and you're never called a bitch or anything of that nature, even when you're playing as Evie. And I think it's such an important decision because when playing that game, I'm not taken out of my element. I can stay in this game. Sometimes when you're playing Tomb Raider, especially if you have a history with any of these triggering elements, you get taken out and you have to put it down for your own mental health. And I should never have to put a game down for my own mental health. And I'm literally playing this for my own mental health.
And I think to kind of Lizzie's point, to kind of contextualize it for you as well, Matt, like within the game itself, when you look at this, there are other angles to take in the fight, in the combat, and in the background dialogue. But then for me, the main problem is that, the devs had actually put out, we want to make her as weak as possible, and we want people to feel like they need to protect her. And so they made deliberate choices to include, and that's not the only thing. They also have her moaning a crap ton, which bothers me. They have, like,
especially in her death scenes.
Yes. She's in a constant state of being hurt, which bothers me. And it was done. It was a choice that they made because they wanted the person playing to feel like they needed to protect her rather than they wanted the person playing to feel like they needed to overcome something. And it was a deliberate choice that they made because they felt that that would resonate with more audiences. And for me, in my own, like, for my own quest of being Lara Croft and like how I've loved her my entire life, that for me was like the exact opposite feeling that I wanted to get out of.
I would pay money to be in the focus group where they decided, yes, like, this is where we want to go. I want to pay money because I want to know who's in that focus group.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know what questions they asked and how many women were in that focus group. Not saying there weren't any, but I just want to know. Yeah. Now, I come from it from a slightly different stance because I do like the idea that this Lara can be hurt. I do like that she gets stabbed through the abdomen. I like that she's constantly being injured because I feel like it's just, for me, it's overpowering to see somebody overcome something like that because it's not obviously similar at all to my health journey. I haven't been stabbed through the abdomen, but it in my own health journey, it's very much constantly overcoming chronic pain to do something incredible. But at the same time, there's no need for any sexual violence or any alluding to potential sex. Like, and that's never a necessary thing.
And the other piece too is like what Tomb Raider also did is Tomb Raider actually revealed the very large demographic of women who play video games, because for a while, the only thing that sustained Tomb Raider as a franchise was the female demographic. So to miss that mark, in my opinion, or not think about that, it's kind of like, it just bugs me. And I just have a hard time with it because I'm like, I can understand why some choices were made, like the scene in the manor and stuff like that. But like, I just really don't like Lara like that.
Yeah.
Which I understand is like a personal bias, but.
Now, the rapiness aside of this is why I was kind of asking about this RPG aspect that you guys are saying, because you're saying I want to go within the story and immersion part, and you're like, this is what I want to do, mm-hmm, with Laura. Well, this RPG thing now allows you to then play as you want to become then more immersed
in
right. this type of environment.
Which is what you get in...
I know that, but I'm saying, like, I obviously am not going to speak on the, like, the rapiness part, but on these, some of these stories with these types of things, of like feeling it to that.
Yeah.
So then, like, where do we balance then between having these RPG aspects so you can feel and play as if like you are Laura versus not having going too far down the other way?
Yeah. And I think like Lizzie kind of talked about it because like Lizzie really enjoys those pieces of the story.
I do.
And for me, I don't, because that's not what I came to the game for, which is why I do like Rise of the Tomb Raider, where you do get more of that personalization in the gameplay. That's not there as much in the first Tomb Raider game.
I think my biggest thing to kind of, I'm trying to not completely reiterate my point, but I'm totally fine with survival games. I'm totally fine with the idea of everything hinges on my ability to get things together, you know, and Lara's crafting. What I'm not fine with is the moment I'm taken out of that because I hear an enemy type talk about a character the way I know a man has talked about me. Because every woman has had that moment where it's like you either hear it or you notice it, or in a bar, wherever it is, where it's like, yeah, they're definitely thinking something. And no matter how realistic a game or a movie is, at the end of the day, it's escapism. You're escaping.
Yeah. And I think to that point, the reason it's a problem to me in Tomb Raider with the Solari Brotherhood is it isn't just like one-offs.
No.
Like, it isn't just like, okay, this happens because, yeah, it's going to happen in that setting because there are a whole bunch of people, like, just dudes cooped up. Okay, like, I can understand a couple of times, but it is constant throughout the entire thing. So I think the balance that you're asking about, like, where do you balance immersion and where do you balance, like, other pieces is, like, it having something be ham-fisted where it's constantly trying to make you, like, the difference between Tomb Raider and Rise is Rise wants you to play as that in immersion. And Tomb Raider, to me, with what they did, is they want you to protect that version. So you're not necessarily playing to be her. You're playing to bring her through this and protect her, which is a different type of immersion, in my opinion.
Yeah. So I agree with that.
Yeah. Whereas Rise, it's all about playing the way you want to play, which is why even though the critique on Rise was its safe story, you end up going into the critical acclaim, and this is where you come into like its use of mechanics becomes the biggest piece.
I also liked Rise better than Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I did too. We already talked about two similar combat systems. We don't have to. We've already talked about how people have said it's similar to Assassin's Creed in the exploration modes and the survival modes and those types of things. The tomb system was lacking since all of them were optional, but then they brought it back in Rise to make you go through at least some of them with still optional pieces. And I actually don't think we need to talk about, but I did want to ask like what you guys feel like. Oh, go ahead, Lizzie.
Well, I was about to say, if you want to hear more about that or read with your eyes about that, Kate and I have multiple pieces on butwhythough.com, butwhythoughpodcast.com, and you can just search those.
Yeah.
You'll have a plethora of content.
Yeah. And we each talk about from our different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. We have more than enough Tomb Raider content.
Oh, there's going to be more.
Oh, don't act like when this game doesn't come out that Kate and I aren't each going to have a different piece doing God knows what.
We know.
Yeah. So like I do want to kind of hear from like both you and Adrian, like where you fall. Like, do you prefer more like from the different Laras in like being a badass or being a victim and a survivor or being a survivor in a different way? Just like from like which one of these things are you all kind of more gravitated towards in your own gameplay styles?
Adrian, you go first. You played the game.
So for me, as it probably comes as no surprise, like I can do both. Like I'm fine with either, because I just look at them as Kate mentioned, I just look at them as different characters. Like this is not, even if you look at like, the movies, like Angelina Jolie is not Alicia Vikander. Like they're just separate Tomb Raiders in my mind, no matter like how much like we're supposed to be growing this reboot into like the Tomb Raider, they're just different. Cause I can take people just being outright badass. Like in Pitch Black, you don't need to know Riddick's backstory. He's just badass and you know he can fuck shit up. Like that's all right. That's okay with me. But I also love character development. I love character development. It's like one of my favorite things about playing video games. So I really, really enjoy the reboot games probably a little bit more, I think, just because there's more world building in it. And then like the story is just kind of like more, it's there more than locking people in freezers, which isn't like, it's not, that's not fun. I just prefer a little bit more role-playing. So I think I prefer the reboot, but I'm totally okay with her just being badass and rape is bad.
I didn't know we had to clarify that.
Thanks for clarifying that for us.
We talked about this like in the episode that we covered. Like I just didn't notice it there nearly as much as Kate did. And that's because I just don't have that perspective.
I was about to say, probably because you don't walk down the street and some guy's like, not like, hey, pretty man.
Literally never.
I've had that happen though.
Yeah, literally never. But I can, like, if it's that ham-fisted, then it probably shouldn't be there. Like, but I'm also, I understand Matt's point of like, well, these dudes are terrible people who deserve to die. So yeah, they're probably going to say like some rapey stuff, but it doesn't need to be there every single time. Yeah. They probably should have some dialogue about like, hey, maybe we shouldn't let her get off, like Lizzie was saying. So I see all the perspectives.
Just to reiterate, nobody here thinks rape is good. I just want to clarify.
Yeah, that. Just, you know, I said it on record.
Okay, Matt, go.
So this is kind of weird because you're talking about, like, I guess the difference between being the survival or badass. But then again, I think of like the related games. And as much as like the Assassin's Creed games are fun, like learning to get your abilities, it's more fun when you have all of your abilities and you just go around murdering the entire city. And same with the Batman games where you can
And I play these games very differently. Oh, God.
I mean, you not just have fun just walking down the street and just stab people in the throat and just keep walking, see what happens?
I don't. I'm going to have to be honest.
Maybe that's why nobody's yelling at me from the side of, hey, you looking at them? Because I've already stabbed them.
So that's, I should do that in life? Is that what you're going to do? I just wanted to check.
I mean, if it makes you feel better. But I mean, as far as from the perspective of that, like, I enjoy fully upgraded characters. But then again, I guess I don't like the middle tier part. Either I want my characters fully upgraded to where I'm just going to kill everybody, or I like it where I get nothing. Like, I play a ton of survival type games where we have nothing. So I don't really know exactly, as far as like if we go from the old school versus new school, I mean, I watched the movies, and the first movie was good. The second one was awful. The reboot I thought was decent, and I'm excited if they have a sequel, but there was definitely a lot of potential loss. I thought they could have done it better with it.
They could have marketed it better.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good perspective to have from you two, just like overall from like your investment in it.
But another interesting aspect between comparing all the other games is all the other games rely heavily on stealth, which I enjoy playing more than these.
Which, so they do have, as we move further down into Shadow, they are making, it's like living.
You mean
like
Shadow of the Batman?
More like Shadow of Assassin's Creed.
There are worse people
there are
to
drop
be.
Down kills, but...
She looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Predator.
She does.
And she could take The Predator. She could do it.
Lara Fawn, a damn T-Rex. I believe in any version
That's
of
That's why her. Whenever people are like, oh, Nathan Drake versus Lara Croft, I'm like, she would kick Nathan Drake's ass and he would enjoy it.
Yes.
Brendan Fraser beat a T-Rex.
Brendan Fraser also beat a mummy. You know who else did? Lara. I don't know if she did.
True. Technically, well, she did. I feel like you could call that queen a mummy.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, it's not a mummy. It's some.
She looked like she needed a moisturizing face mask.
Okay, so getting back into the boat, why those? The game itself is highly influenced by actual realist painters to kind of bring depth to the game, and every location that they've shot, that they've constructed in the game, they've gone to its equivalent or that actual place to bring that realism into the game. On top of that, for Lara's new look, there are a few things here specifically, like they made her more realistic, which is good. And so it has, like, you have this not so complicated response from some dude saying her boobs are too small, but then you also have this complicated response, this actually complicated response from women who say, okay, well, now that we have this one, we're going to throw out what the old Lara was because she wasn't made for us and this Lara is. And so I have a complicated relationship, not a complicated relationship, because I love her new look. It's perfect. I think she's amazing. But just like a lot of the dialogue around it with like among women, like ourselves talking about it, there's a lot of quickness to just throw out the old Lara without recognizing what she did at the time, even with how she looked.
And you're talking about like how she looks like her build wise, right?
Not yes, her like, build, not the polygons.
Or no, I'm just talking about I'm talking about like her build that kind of that way too, and not the fact that she's like actually wears like a jacket and actual gear.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's all of it. Like it's all of it, but then it's also just mainly the fact that like this looks like a real woman and it isn't made for dudes to look at, whereas people, even like a lot of, at least from the people that I've seen on Twitter, a lot of women really, it feels like they also reduce Lara down to her breast size by only seeing her as like this super sexy character and not actually looking at like what those games did for revolutionizing multiple avenues in gaming for both women and gameplay themselves. And so like I have this relationship with her new look where it's like I love it, but then I also just hate the discourse around it, because a lot of it is like you have these dudes yelling in the background that nobody really cares about because they're just being dicks and saying, I want big boobs. Oh,
well, no. Well, I mean, Hooter did say that they're losing, that people don't like boobs anymore. So maybe they're trying to bring the boob.
Yeah. Millennials killed boobs.
Hooters doesn't realize that people don't have problem with the human breast. It's the chicken breast they serve.
They're trying to bring the boob back.
It didn't go anywhere. It's like when Justin Timberlake brought sexy back. Justin,
it's been here. So yeah, I mean, that's just kind of like how I feel with her new look. I personally love it. I think Shadow the Tomb Raider, holy crap, they spent a lot of time modeling her biceps. She looks like she can crush some people with them.
I'm so excited. So good,
especially in the gameplay. But on top of that, the mocap that they used for Rise of the Tomb Raider for Camilla Luddington, they wanted to make sure that her first game on the 8th generation of console, yes, Lara's been on 8 different consoles, it was perfect. So they ended up spraying MOVA fluorescent paint on Luddington's face, and they were able to obtain 7,000 different points of reference, to the point that they actually had to animate down from the realistic expressions that Luddington was giving for the mocap, because it looked too real. So they had to bring those pieces down. On top of that, they spent a lot of time looking at the physical details in the cutscene, making sure that when Lara's muscles tense in the game, that they actually showed that as she climbed.
That is the worst thing. What? That games took so long to get.
Like going, instead of like, oh, I gotta climb.
Well, not just so much how fast you climb, but just the fact that like all of a sudden muscles don't actually move.
Yeah.
Or they tense wrong.
Yes, and they spent a lot of time making sure that they did that. They also spent time on studying how skin blotched in cold so that they could make her skin blotch that way.
That's so creepy, but I love it.
Yeah, like the wear and tear on Lara is specifically because of that, and they had pose-based deformers in order to sculpt Lara's exact shape as she moved. So every piece of Lara's movement has been crafted to reflect an actual human body, which is just amazing.
While you say all that, the best part that they add is they added the pants, which are the most comfy pants if anybody's ever gone hiking of any sort.
Oh yeah, her hiking pants are great.
I'm so excited. I love her. Whenever in Shadow they like broke down each of her clothing, I got so excited because I appreciate a good sports bra.
Oh yeah, that's right, they broke down the sports
bra. They broke it down and they were like, this is a moisture, it was like an Adidas ad.
Yeah,
they're like, it's moisture really wicking and these leggings, and I'm like, yes, please give it all to me. I love active wear.
I would wear those pants over any pair of jeans.
And then like so beyond that, when we break it down with the numbers, the first so looking at ratings, Tomb Raider 2013 is a 9.1 on IGN, while Performing with the Definitive Edition on PS4 at an 85% and Xbox One is 81%. And the PC score is very similar to the console before it. So the 360 and stuff is sitting at an 86. It really doesn't dip below that. And then Rise of the Tomb Raider has a 9.3 on IGN with an 86 on PS4, 88 on Xbox One, and an 86 on PC.
Are you going to take a Metacritic from any of these?
These are all Metacritic.
Okay.
Yeah, all of these are Metacritic scores. IGN is just up there because it's IGN. And
do
then
you really like IGN at this point?
No, they don't. And then Shadow of the Tomb Raider, unfortunately, currently is, from those who have played and reviewed it, is sitting at a 78 according to Metacritic. So it's a fairly substantial drop off, but that may change once players get their hands on the entirety of the game.
Is it still under embargo for reviews, or is it lifted?
No, it's as lifted because recording. You have actual gameplay going on.
Okay. Yes. I was watching somebody earlier play this.
Yeah. And so the revenue, Tomb Raider 2013 sold 1 million copies in 48 hours since its release. It ended up selling more than 11 million copies that month that it was out, and it is the best-selling Tomb Raider game to date. And that's the reason why they released the Definitive Edition again on Xbox One and PS4. The fourth best-selling game was Rise of the Tomb Raider. The thing is they released Rise of the Tomb Raider the same day that Fallout 4 was released.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a poor decision. I remember that.
Very badly. No wonder I didn't remember when it released.
Yeah. So essentially, the Xbox One version, the console versions did worse compared to the PC versions. It had a really solid launch on PC. Ultimately, the company was happy with the money and copies it sold overall, but it did not make any big top lists for sales because of the games it was competing with, which was Black Ops 3, Fallout 4, and FIFA. But it was mainly Fallout 4 that really kind of killed
it. And who made Fallout 4?
Bethesda. Oh, but Fallout 4 has the same audience as what would play Tomb Raider. The other two don't.
Exactly.
People who play FIFA only play FIFA.
That is a lie.
Matt played a lot of FIFA.
When was the last time you played FIFA, Matt?
Probably about 2 months ago.
FIFA regularly, to the point where EA can make $1 billion off of it.
Well, I met Kate, who doesn't like FIFA, and then I ran out of people to play with. This is the only reason I don't play FIFA anymore. Before Kate, I used to play FIFA almost every day.
It's for the best.
So then we go into the Alicia Vikander movie, which we've talked about throughout. Again, just like there was comments about Lara's body in the 3D model, there were comments about Alicia Vikander versus Angelina Jolie. And I just want to say, Alicia Vikander can fight all of y'all because she is ripped.
She is.
She got so freaking ripped.
She is.
Oh, is it my turn to take the hot tech train where I take Vikander over Gal Gadot?
That's fine.
But no, we love her as Wonder Woman, even though she's an Amazon that's like 5'2" and like barely 100 pounds.
Listen, some of us want to be Amazons, even though we're 5 feet tall and 120 pounds, okay? I don't see the problem with that.
Lizzie and I have also had this discussion in our DMs, too.
I know, so, like, I all love of these Wonder Woman, and Kate's just like, meh.
Yeah.
Gal Gadot's also like 5'10". She's not 5'2", so I don't know where you're getting 5'2" from.
Yeah, I'm sorry, she's so small, I can't tell how tall she is.
He's thinking of me. Because I'm so tiny. I'm also Wonder Woman. That was another movie I left and I was like, I can fight people with my bare fist. And people were like, you really can't.
But the cool thing was Vikander was so set on doing all of her stunts. She went through extensive training to make sure that she could perform all of the boxing and have it be fit to form. Like she actually learned the fighting that she did in the movie because she didn't want people to stand in for her. And those, when you see her back muscles flexing as she's pulling herself up on things, that is actually Vikander's muscle. She tried not to get a stunt double for the majority of the stuff that she did. I love her. I loved it. It was so well done. And she's a perfect young Lara.
She is.
Angie's perfect classic Lara, but Vikander is perfect young Lara.
I did like the little kind of Easter egg they had with like her two braids and the two guns.
Yes, that made me so happy.
I thought it was so dumb and undercut so everything the movie did.
That was
so cheesy. So dumb.
I hated it.
Don't play for sequels. If just let it be what it is. Don't go for the sequel already.
I'm gonna take it, Michael Sabrinic, right now.
The sequels were really spaced out and they didn't think that they were going to do them, and Vin Diesel funded all of those movies basically on his own. So unless Alicia Vikander is going to fund the next movie, she can't be just pulling guns out of nowhere. I don't like it.
You can, because it's fan service. And as somebody who enjoyed all the fan service,
it was so terrible though.
It was just
6 hours later.
But my opinion is, I thought it was dumb, and my opinion is valid. I'm not discrediting your opinion. I'm just saying my opinion. But I also agree that they should have just let it just be supernatural. I hate that they just went like, oh, well, here's the explanation for it. Like, the best part of like the first Tomb Raider game was like this, her learning about, or the Tomb Raider games in general, is like her learning like, oh, what is this myth stuff? And then they just kind of threw it out for like no reason. I don't understand why they threw it out.
That was the biggest disappointment. I could have deal with the bike sign, the bike scene, and then her dad island scene of like, oh, I'm alive now. I'm alive. I'm still alive. And I'm alive. Now I'm dead. But I'm alive. But I'm dead. But
I love this movie.
I actually enjoyed this movie, but
I enjoyed it. But
I bought it the day it came out on Blu-ray, and I had a moment with the lady at Target because she was like, "Oh, I loved this movie," and I was like, "Me too." Laura beats everything, and she was like, "Oh God, get this lady out of my life."
So it was one of those, like, I really hope they make a sequel to this, but what they did, but the parts that I didn't like were just parts that I was like, "Oh, really bad."
And if you want to hear more about that, you can go to our Tomb Raider spoiler review.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great movie to start a franchise to do a sequel. It's like a great setup movie. It doesn't mean the setup movies are any good, but they set up something.
Except for the "I'll have what she's having."
That was bad. That was bad.
Like the Batman Beyond kind of setup movie. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
How many times can I compare Lara Croft to Batman in one episode? Jesus.
I mean, you've never been more on brand than you have now.
It's like when I found that I took a picture in front of the sign in the Spider-Man game that said gluten-free. And I was like, guys, it's my brand. Gluten-free Spider-Man. It's me.
Okay, so we can move on in the very last piece. Shadow of the Tomb Raider. This game is set 2 months after the events of Rise of the Tomb Raider, and it follows Lara Croft as she ventures through Mesoamerica and South America to the legendary city of Paititi, battling the paramilitary organization Trinity and racing to stop the Mayan apocalypse. So this game has been in development since 2015, following the completion of Rise, and so it's been in development for a long time. And it was designed to conclude Lara's journey begun in the 2013 reboot. So this series is really a trilogy, and the key theme to this is going to be the jungle environment, which is where you are after playing the combat in the game. You are going to get more of the Assassin's Creed-y. And I think especially with the a lot of the successes that I've had, they're really it's called like One with the Jungle or something like that, where you're using that to blend in a lot more and become a piece of your environment, and it seems very mandatory.
So it's me when I put on my charcoal mask.
So like that's one of the key things, but I think they did that because ultimately you have I played 45 minutes of it at PAX West. I wanted to play it again. They eventually realized that the game demo was too long and they cut it. So people could only play like was it 10 or 15 minutes of it.
I was gonna say 45 minutes, that's a long time to play a game demo at a convention.
It really was. And it was amazing because my entire press hour was just that game, or my press 45 minutes. Because they let us in late, was just playing the game, and it made me extremely happy. They introduce you to the underwater mechanics because they've already dropped that in Shadow of the Tomb Raider. You're going to get more underwater exploration.
Which underwater is always terrible. It's always a bad idea.
It's great. It's
not in Tomb Raider,
and it's perfect. And it brought back every single piece of my Tomb Raider 2 feelings, because that's my favorite Tomb Raider game.
Underwater
was in it.
Like, just in life?
I don't do underwater stuff.
Oh, no. He's very scared of underwater things.
I don't do underwater games. I played fucking Echo. That thing was over.
And then there is a lot more overt platforming that happens, specifically in the level that I played. And then the fight mechanics are just kind of meh. They're nothing new. They're like all the other fight mechanics. But I think, personally, that the underwater physics... the underwater play, because they don't give you as much help as the original Tomb Raider games do, is going to build for a lot of anxious levels, which I'm super excited for, which sounds really weird.
I mean, like, to up my prescription of Xanax prior to this launch. Damn.
But it really feels like a game that it's embraced both sides. Like, it is, like, the combat system is very much what we have in Rise and Tomb Raider 2013, but the platforming and the puzzle elements are straight out of the original pieces, and the underwater is where it really, really gets me. So this is a game that I'm extremely excited for. It's set in, the pieces that I saw were set in Mexico. The Calavera stuff was done really tastefully, so I was worried about that for a little bit, but I'm excited, and I'd go back and play it again. But it's really well done from what I saw from the piece in Mexico. Obviously, we have to see how it does on launch day, with how it deals with those environments.
But you saw it in your 45. I'm surprised that they showed any of it.
Yeah, so the gameplay itself, and I have an entire review of the demo up on butwhythepodcast.com. Essentially, it's just you leading out from a Mexican bar wearing a calavera to blend into the crowd as you're being led through it.
Okay.
And then going into the temple setting to scale the Mayan pyramid.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So I don't, so story-wise, I don't know how it plays, but it was done tastefully in the piece that I saw.
We I'm better excited. Not be shooting a bunch of jaguars in this game.
You do.
Why? Yeah. It's such a bad decision. Like, jaguars' ecosystems are being destroyed by poaching. We shouldn't have to kill them. We're in their home. I'm gonna let them kill them.
You're gonna go real far in the game. I can tell.
I'm not gonna kill any jaguars ever.
You represented by PETA?
No, they're just like near threatened like animals. They don't need to kill a bunch of those ones. Come on.
Well, I mean,
she's going into mythical areas, Adrian.
They're mythical jaguars. They're not
real. Okay. Mythical jaguars. All right, so they're not real. Got it.
You can kill a lot of parrots and birds. Is that better?
I can kill lots of parrots. I can do that.
Anyway, that's all I have. I'm very excited for Shadow. Are you excited for Shadow the Tomb Raider, Lizzie?
Yes. I pre-ordered the Steelbook.
Nice.
So, yes.
It will be released by the time you hear this episode.
Yes, it will.
It comes out the 14th.
This episode will be out.
So.
17th.
If you don't have it, then you should get on that and avoid my Twitter because I'm going to be taking so many photos because they have a photo mode.
Oh, God.
I'm going to selfie with some llamas.
I will be streaming. I will be streaming it. I'm playing my first PC version of the game. I'm a little worried about it.
You know, you can just take the controller.
I know.
Right?
That's probably what I'm going to end up doing. But still, after I bought it, I realized that we have a 4K Xbox and a 4K TV, and I didn't buy it for that. And I was very sad with my decision. But I will be streaming it because it's on the computer and it'll be easier to stream. So you can come in and watch me be Lara.
I'll probably be hanging out in that Twitch chat if you also want to talk to me and listen to more of my bad jokes, but in text form.
Adrian, are you excited for it?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it. I'm excited to see you play it to see how you like it before I think I buy it. Because I'm going to play it. I just want to know if I should buy it on the PC or on like the Xbox. Because I have the big screen, so that'd be fun. But I also like playing on my computer now. So I don't know. But I'm really excited for it. I love the two games, so I'm excited to see where they take it. Even if I'm going to be, you know, contributing to the near-threatened population of jaguars.
Matt, you have no intention of playing this game.
Do you want me to answer this question?
You have no intention of playing this
game. I have no intention to play this game. Assassin's Creed, the new one, comes out, and Fallout comes out, which are way better. So
that's true. I probably do need to beat this before Fallout comes out, like, for sure.
Just don't sleep. That's what I do.
I do that when I don't sleep. I end up watching crummy TV, and then I'm mad all day. And
he's
then I'll
powering
sleep.
Through DC TV right now.
But no, I do hope you guys enjoy the game. I don't. I said I'm not going to invest any money into it. Plus, you will have it if I never care to play it. But I still need to go back and actually beat the old Batman game that I started that somebody bought for me that I still have not beaten.
So Lizzie, why don't you give us your final thought and where everybody can find you?
I am excited for Shadow. I obviously really love Lara Croft. I'm sitting next to a Lara Croft Barbie doll that someone got me for my birthday. And if you want to find me and tell me about how much you love Lara Croft, or if you want to tell me that her boobs are too small so I can block you, I'm at Lizzie Lynn Garcia on Twitter.
And where they can find your work.
Oh, it's on butwhythepodcast.com. butwhythepodcast.com. It's on that site.
We need to learn our URL.
I should know the website I edit for. It's fine. Also, if you want to read Kate's stuff, it's on there. I edited it.
She did.
I'm kind of worried where it ended up at.
Did you all have any more final thoughts, or can we just wrap it up?
Wrap this damn thing up.
Okay. You can find
the podcast. But I really think... let's get out of here.
You can find the podcast at But Why Though PC. Know that we are going to be in Dallas, specifically Irving, the Irving Convention Center for OP Live on the 22nd and the 23rd. Come watch us stream. Come talk to us at our meet and greet and watch Adrian go into a Fortnite scrimmage and hopefully win. because the honor of this podcast
is please Rain Man this.
Yeah, right.
The honor of this podcast. Oh boy.
It all rides on you. Yeah. We're not very honorable, but whatever little bit we have is on Adrian's shoulders in that four eight scrim.
Dope. No pressure. Cool.
And then you can find me at Oh My Myth Randir on Twitter, and you can follow us at twitch.tv/butwhythoughpc for me streaming this game. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperReuiz93.
Matt?
Find me in the fridge.
Oh, God.
Did you fridge yourself?
Okay, we're done. What happened?